Extract from Ethnographic Travels by Professor Tolmund K. Parecki of the University of Dilika. Of the seven principalities of the Kievan Empire, Ashgabat least resembles any of the others. It is the most southerly province, many weeks' ride from the harsh snowfields of the Kievan heartland. It is the most temperate and fertile region, the most recently acquired in conquest, and the territory most profoundly affected by influences from beyond the Ice Bear Throne's domain. Centuries of trade between Ashgabat and the lush tropical islands of the Laut Bessar, the great ocean 1,000 watery leagues to the south, have mellowed the inhabitants, one might even say civilized them, and created a race apart from the warlike barbarians of the north. Art and music flourish here, and Ashgabati poetry is rightly admired across the world. Sweet red wine rather than harsh marak spirit is drunk at the feasts for which the princes of Ashgabat are famous, and the soaring beauty of the basilica, the architectural jewel at the heart of their glittering city, is the envy of the whole empire. Katerina stared at the skeletal body of the holy martyr, the long carved hands at the end of the jointed wooden arms were nailed to the fork of the holy tree above the martyr's head. The unnaturally stretched limbs and corresponding angle of the torso meant that the ribs were absurdly prominent. Indeed, the emaciated body on this martyr gave the rack of bones a blade-like sharpness that Katerina had never seen on a statue before, and certainly never on any living person. "You could slice gherkins on them," she thought, stifling an impious giggle. "You could cut a loaf of black bread." This was the southern style, she knew. She had seen these martyrs at home in Kev, in her governess's picture books, and once in a dusty chapel window made of broken pieces of coloured crystal that was tucked away behind the imperial palace. However, now that she was down here in this strange little backwater, now that an actual holy martyr statue was within spitting distance, she found the image grotesque, indeed, almost comical. Her family, which was as old as the Ice Bears, had always given fealty to the ancient Kievan gods, brutish giants who strode about the heavens wielding hammer and lightning bolt and smiting humans whenever they grew bored of quarrelling with each other. But the emperor had not forbidden the new faith, despite its oddity, and the worship of the martyr was spreading fast throughout the seven principalities. Accordingly, her far-sighted governess had made sure that she had a firm grasp of the tenets of this bizarre new religion. The archbishop of this same faith, standing before the high altar of the Basilica of Ashgabat, was mumbling on interminably about the sacred duties of a wife and mother. Katerina let the words wash over her, only sampling a phrase now and then to relish its absurdity, and continued staring at the extraordinary statue on the wall behind him. She scarcely believed in her own gods, and nothing on this wide earth could induce her to give any credence to this ridiculous, skinny, half-naked wretch. It occurred to her that if the red and orange painted flames of the unbelievers had not been consuming the holy martyr's stick-like white legs, and here she smothered another bubble of merriment, this malnourished fellow would certainly have expired from hunger in a day or so anyway. The same could hardly be said of the bridegroom looming at her side. Prince Kazeki might have embodied the very meaning of well-fed. Not that he was overly fat. Indeed, thought Katerina, stealing a sideways glance at him, he was passably handsome in an exotic southern way. Long, muscular limbs, broad shoulders, and a barrel-like torso. His blue-black hair, high cheekbones, and dark brown eyes, inherited, she assumed, from his mother, a Han venerable from the vast ricelands of the Celestial Republic to the east of the Empire, gave his looks a pleasing quality. His considerable weight, too, gave him a physical presence that was appealing. It was a shame, really, she thought, that all this prime southern manhood would soon be wasted. Prince Kazeki's strong right hand was grasping hers, and she could feel the greasy mingling of their palm sweat as the Archbishop moved on to the part of the ceremony in which he sternly informed the newly joined couple before him that the fleshy side of marriage must only be undertaken for the purposes of reproduction.